Starting the year strong is easier and more delicious with Omaha Steaks premium prepackaged proteins. From handcrafted USDA certified tender steaks to gourmet burgers, versatile chicken and pork, and so much more. Omaha Steaks has unmatched variety and high quality proteins that everyone loves. And right now, you can taste the difference and get an extra $35 off at omahasteaks.com with promo code AUDIO at checkout. Stay satisfied, get energy, and fuel your routine with premium prepackaged proteins from Omaha Steaks. Every steak is perfectly aged to maximize tenderness and hand-cut by master butchers in America's heartland, with every bite backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Let Omaha Steaks deliver high-quality proteins right to your door. Visit omahasteaks.com and get an extra $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code AUDIO. Terms apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk About Murder. Today we are diving into something that sounds academic, but it's actually one of the most dangerous, mortally serious patterns of relationships, coercive control. Now I know it sounds like something you'd learn about in a university class, but coercive control is actually the engine behind so many tragedies that I talk about here. It's the part of the story that starts long before that first 911 call. It is the quiet, tightening net that leads to intimate partner homicides, child murders, and the destruction of victims' mental health. So today we're going to walk through what coercive control is, what it does to its victims, and how it becomes so deadly. And I'm going to share two cases to start. One that involves intimate partner homicide, and another involving a parent who murders their child as the ultimate act of control. And then near the end of the episode, we're going to talk about a case where coercive control drove a victim towards self-harm, because yes, that is also a lethal outcome of this crime, but YouTube has the sensitivity of a Victorian aunt clutching her pearls, so we have to kind of tuck that one safely towards the end. And then finally, we're going to talk about Scotland and the UK, who are the global leaders who actually bothered to modernize their laws here, and really what Canada needs to learn from them. So let's get into it. Coercive control isn't about anger, and it's not about arguments, and it's definitely not about communication issues, though you'll hear a lot of lawyers trying their best with their limited material. Coercive control is a patterned campaign to dominate another person. And it can include things like isolation, monitoring, financial control, restricting movement, threats and intimidation, emotional degradation, and the slow erosion of a person's independence and their identity. It is death by a thousand little permissions that you no longer have. And victims often say that they felt like they were disappearing. And that is the point. Coercive control is a dismantling of the self. So if you've ever wondered why so many victims stay, which a big part of the answer is, by the time the relationship becomes dangerous, the victim's lifelines have already been cut. This isn't bad decision making. It is actually captivity. So let's start with a case that shows coercive control at its ugliest apex, which is the murder of Angela Craig in Colorado. Angela was a mother of six. She was married to James Craig, who was a man who never once needed to physically hit her to maintain absolute dominance over her. His tools were manipulation, medical deception, and isolating her through carefully crafted narratives. He controlled their finances. He told friends and family that she was unstable, ensured that she was dependent on him for answers about her own health, and presented himself as this devoted husband while slowly poisoning her with arsenic and cyanide. Now, James's version of coercive control was pretty clinical, thought out, it was choreographed, and when Angela began starting to assert herself and gaining a little bit of independence, showing some confidence, reconnecting with friends, well, that wasn't just inconvenient to him, it was intolerable, and so he escalated to murder. Now, this is the pattern in so many intimate partner homicides. The most dangerous moment for a victim is not when the abuse begins, but when she begins to leave. Now, coercive control doesn't just fade out. It ends in like a cliff. Another devastating example of coercive control leading to lethal consequences comes from Australia, where a father, after years of monitoring, stalking, and threatening his ex-wife, killed their toddler daughter during a custody visit. Not because he wanted the child gone, but because he wanted the mother to suffer that most profound grief possible. And that's what filicide-motivated coercive control really is. It is an extension of intimate partner violence into the bodies of children. And these murders are rarely spontaneous. They are premeditated emotional warfare. A final declaration of dominance that if I can't control you, I will destroy the source of your joy. And this is not madness. This is intentional harm delivered with absolute clarity. So now that we've seen a couple of times that coercive control turns outward in like homicides of partners and children, we really need to talk about what it does internally. Because victims experience chronic hypervigilance, anxiety and depression. They have some cognitive decline, often referred to as brain fog from trauma. They suffer from social isolation, financial instability, that identity loss, and a sense of feeling trapped, like an entrapment that is so severe that they can't imagine life outside the abuser's orbit. So this is not just a feeling of being stressed. This is a complete psychological takeover. Coercive control is designed intentionally to collapse the victim's world until only the abuser remains. And so that brings us to the next outcome, the one YouTube would prefer that we whisper about. But we're going to discuss it at the risk of being demonetized because I think victims deserve to have their reality acknowledged. So our third example is a case from the UK, and we'll call her Maya, though that's not her real name. Maya was 27 years old. She was bright, funny, and slowly being suffocated by a partner who dictated everything. Her clothes, her schedule, her contacts, even how long she could spend at the grocery store. And there had never been any physical assaults, not a single one. And because of that, Maya thought that she wasn't really allowed to call it abuse. Her partner did not need his fists. He used control, surveillance, accusations, and psychological restriction until Maya felt that there was really no escape route left for her. And when she couldn't find a way out, she turned the harm inwards. And a moment of despair that she thankfully survived when a neighbor intervened. And later she said something that chills me every time I think about it. It was the only choice he couldn't control. And that sentence alone is an entire seminar on coercive control. And it is why criminalizing coercive control matters. Because some victims don't die at the hands of their abusers, but because of the emotional prison that their abuser builds around them. And these cases are preventable when we take those patterns seriously. So let's turn to something hopeful, because yes, occasionally governments do things that do make some sense. So the first jurisdictions to criminalize coercive control outright were England and Wales, because they recognized that psychological domination is violence. And in 2018, Scotland looked to England and Wales and said, that's a cute idea, but watch what we're going to do. And so their Domestic Abuse Act is considered now the gold standard, because it defines coercive control fairly broadly, recognizes the patterns over these incidents, includes threats, isolation, gaslighting, and harms to pets or children, and requires professional training for police, judges, and prosecutors. So Scotland now treats coercive control as at the core of domestic homicide, not just an unfortunate prelude to it. Now, Canada criminalized coercive control in 2024, but the implementation of that varies pretty widely. Some provinces are really trying, others are still kind of shrugging it off with, well, he didn't hit you. We're behind them, but we're not hopelessly behind them. We just need the political will and the funding to kind of catch up. Coercive control is the invisible crime behind so many tragedies that I cover here. It leads to intimate partner homicides. It leads to children being used as weapon, and it leads to victims turning inward in despair. But it is also something that we can intervene in, because if we're willing to treat it as lethal and not just as relationship problems, Scotland and the UK have proved that laws can change, and Canada can get there as well. And the more that we talk about coercive control really openly, with compassion and without any judgment, I think the more that we can shine a light on these warning signs before they turn fatal. So thank you for joining me for another episode of Let's Talk About Murder. I hope you will join me again and also listen to my regular episodes where we take a deep dive into a singular case. And as always, thank you so much for listening and for watching.